We'll do it live! Fuck it!
Hello, Matt.
How goes it?
I was hoping to get Maganya on the line. She said she might do it, but she rejected my call. So
I like that I'm sloppy seconds to Maganya.
Well, that's pretty good. She's pretty
good. You're right.
She's pretty fucking hot. Like I'll take that. So UFC 200 just finished, and you are probably way more qualified to talk about it than I am right now. So what did you think of the show?
I felt like it started off really good, and then it got, like, the fight pass portion, those fights were going bang bang, first round finishes. I'm like, this is going to be a great show. Then when it got on to Fox Sports 2, then Fox Sports 1.
Oh my god.
Started dragging.
Fuck Fox Sports 2. No one gets Fox Sports 2. I'm like, oh, I'll watch some Sage Northcutt, even though he's a fucking golden retriever. And I had to go online and like find an illegal stream for like 10 minutes to like watch Sage Northcutt win a boring ass fucking bullshit decision.
That was a bad fight.
Yeah.
Neither of them looked like they belonged at all. That was a sloppy fight. You know what I was thinking? Like, Sage on the ground is like Brock standing. There's a weird similarity where they look like they're both, like, have never done it before.
Of course, the difference is 20 years in age, and that means that Sage can actually learn, and Brock is like an old man who's a fucking Viking god. We'll talk about him later. Let's go through the fucking show until maybe Angela texts me, and then I'll cut you off because, I'm a fucking slut.
We'll do what you gotta do.
Oh, fucking A. Everyone knows. Oh, that'd be amazing. We'll start at the top of the show. Jim Miller versus Takanori Gomi. Miller came out and just basically schooled Gomi and got a rear naked choke. What did you think of the fight?
It kind of went the way I thought it would. Gomi did not look good. He hasn't looked good in a long time, except for a few like quick knockout wins or wins against guys that aren't elite. And Miller looked good. I mean, Miller took him down and choked him out. I'm guessing Gomi might get cut after that fight, unless they want to keep him for like the next show in Japan or Asia or something. But he's 1-4 in his last five and hasn't looked good. He had the Lozon loss as well, where he looked pretty bad. I that could be it for Gomi. Ryzen might be calling him shortly.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. But on the other hand, Kid Yamamoto has not been cut yet. So I feel like if you are an ethnic minority, you have a fucking job for life. Like, if I could fight and, like, get a good tan and speak Spanish, I'd be a fucking guaranteed a job for life. And on that racist note, the second fight was
Musashi.
Oh yeah, okay. Gegard Mousasi and Thiago Santos, and go for it. Tell me what's happening. I just got a text.
I heard that Mousasi just outstruck him, took him down early, got into side control, and then knocked Santos out with an uppercut. Santos just kind of looked out of his league, I thought. Mousasi is a good top eight sort of middleweight, and Santos had never fought anybody at that level, and he looked a little out of his league, I thought. It was too big of a step up, too quick for him.
What the fuck was that?
I don't know.
I heard like it sounded like a chair creaking and shit.
Oh yeah, I'm rocking back and forth.
Oh, I wish I had a fucking rocking chair. Oh,
it's not a rocking chair. It's just a like old desk computer chair.
Oh, if it rocks, it's a rocking chair, and as one of the whole... Wait a second, everybody. I'm going to let everybody hear me use Siri to text Angela Magana. I understand. Let me know when you are available to talk tonight, and we will do a show. Holy shit, that actually just happened. Anyways, a rocking chair is a staple of, you know, us old dudes.
Mm.
Because the last show, we talked about lighthouses and lobsters and old people stuff, but which I have, like, 25% recollection of. But
that would still be about 45 minutes, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't actually know what you just said, but all I know is that Musashi came out and he fucking just took Santos apart and beat the shit out of him, finished him in the first round, and he looked like Musashi looks the way that people that are high look. Like, he just plays kind of lazy, and he just does what he wants to do, and then boom, lands one shot.
He looks good. He looked good. Hopefully he gets a top five guy. I'd like to see him fight somebody really good, like an elite middleweight, but we'll see. He has, like, no name, considering he's only got, like, 3 losses in his whole career. It's like nobody talks about him, or he's never talked about being in the mix. I mean, it's weird.
That's because he is ethnically Armenian, and they are subhuman pieces of shit. Fuck you, Armenia! Good for you, Turkey, in the 1920s. Moving on, Diego Sanchez, Joe Lozon. Tell everybody what happened.
Lozon just outstruck him right from the bell. It was quick. I think it was over in a minute and a half. Lozon just beat him up on the feet. At one point, Sanchez, towards the end, lost his mouthpiece. He was just out on his feet. It happened quick, and it was over. I think some refs might have let it go on another, 30 seconds, but Lozon pounced on him. Diego was busted up, and he wasn't knocked out, but he was definitely stunned and out on his feet. And that ended it. I think it was like a minute and a half.
Is this kind of like the end of Diego Sanchez as a real, UFC level fighter?
I don't think so. I think he still has. It's not like Gomi, where it's like he's 1-4 in his last 5. I mean, sometimes you get rocked early and you lose the fight. It doesn't mean you're done necessarily. I do think Diego's past his prime, without a doubt. But I could see him picking up a couple wins against mid-level guys. Still, it's not like he's totally shot. I thought he was going to win the fight against Lozon. I thought Lozon was shot after his last fight, so who knows?
When you look at it as far as Diego versus the next fight on the card, Sage Northcutt winning over Enrique Martin, would Diego beat Sage Northcutt?
I think so.
And what did you think about the white boy? I don't know. He's fucking 19. Like, I don't want to make fun of Sage too much because he is a legitimate child. And, like, you're like me, I imagine, where, like, the older you get, you're 19. You're a child. Like, I don't want to, like, make fun of him too much. On the other hand,
he's different than most 19-year-olds, too, though.
Well, true.
He speaks and behaves is not typical of any 19 or 20-year-old I know. It's funny. But
Wait. Did you see where, like, in the past couple of days, there's some fucking app for your phone to go collect Pokemon?
I've seen people using it. Pokemon was before my time? After my time.
Yeah, mine too. Like, I'm seeing grown adults, like, I'm going to catch a fucking Pokemon here in Chicago. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And I feel like Sage is so young. He's like, what is Pokemon? I grew up doing Snapchat or something like that. But he fought Enrique Marine, and he won. and I didn't get to see the fight because, you know, no one has Fox Sports 2, but you do. So,
I do.
Tell us about the fight.
Here on good old Cape Cod, Fox Sports 2 is in standard def, which made both of the guys look bigger, wider than normal. But it was a close fight. It was just lower level MMA, and I thought it was like they would take the back and lose it, and Sage just tosses Marine off his back, and just it was just kind of sloppy. I mean, it wasn't high level UFC caliber fighting by any stretch. I thought Sage won the first round close, Marine won the second, and Sage won the third close with a little ground and pound at the end. But Sage didn't look impressive by any stretch.
You guys have channels that come in standard definition?
Yeah. Yeah, so do you. You do, you just don't know it.
I would never watch garbage. I am above that. I am a man of the elite. And, oh, fuck that. Let's move on. TJ Dillashaw and Rafael Assunção. Dillashaw got the win after, you know, a decision. He kind of did like the Dominic Cruz light. What did you think happened here? How was your what was your opinion of the fight?
I had Dillashaw winning 30-27. I thought he won all three rounds. He was just a quicker, more active, aggressive guy. Assunção landed some good shots, but overall, TJ was just more aggressive and too quick for him. Obviously, Dillashaw's probably improved some or quite a bit since the first Assunção fight. A lot of people think he won the first Assunção fight too. So maybe a little redemption here for Dillashaw. It wasn't like a blowaway performance where you're thinking to yourself, God, he needs to fight Cruz again right away. He didn't blow the doors off Assunção, but he won the fight solidly.
Yeah, I watched it. And it was one of those fights where I'm like, TJ was better. He was quicker. He moved in and out better. He had better footwork, hand speed, head movement. But when the fight was over, it's like, yeah, you won. But it's kind of like whenever people give the bullshit, MMA is like chess. It's like, yeah, you won a game of chess, which means that nobody got hurt except for the nerds. Ego. And, you know, again, he won, but who's next in line at 135 for Cruz, if you know?
I don't.
Yeah, no one knows. No one.
I mean, to me, I would probably do the Dillashaw Faber fight, because it's really the only fight that makes sense for Faber at this point. And it would make sense for Dillashaw, too. Dillashaw, in theory, you would think would be the favorite against Faber. He wins that fight, then he could get the shot against Cruz. What do you do with Cruz in the meantime? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Exactly. Maybe the winner of Wednesday's fight in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, with Michael McDonald and some...
Lineker, right?
Yeah, I don't know if that's 20. Oh, who gives a fuck? I was gonna go to this fucking show, but it's Sioux Falls, and I hate my family. Johnny Hendricks took on Kelvin Gastelum. Tell everybody what just happened in this fight.
Well, prior to the fight, Hendricks missed weight again, so that's something different. By a quarter pound too, which is bizarre. You would think you could sweat that out and get on the scale. If you've probably already cut 20 pounds. But in the fight itself, I thought Hendricks just looked old. I don't know if it's the Thompson fight or just all the wars he's had through the course of his career with Lawler and GSP and all these five-round fights, but he looked a little older, a little slower. He wasn't really putting many combinations together. Gastelum just looked like the quicker, younger, more active fighter. I actually scored the second round for Hendricks in spite of all of that, just because he kind of pressured Gastelum against the cage and got a takedown. But overall, I felt like Gastelum dominated on the feed, and he kept it standing in the first and third round.
Yeah, that's I kind of saw it the same way, where as an overall 50-minute fight, I thought that Gastelum was just quicker, sharper, more motivated, and Hendricks missed weight by a quarter of a pound, but he wasn't like, you know, fat or anything. But it just seemed like he didn't have that extra urge to dig down deep, even in the weigh-ins and then in the fight. And I think he could have won the fight, but he let Gastelum just outwork him. And, Kelvin Gastelum's a fucking really good fight, like, shockingly good. He's only 24, which makes
yeah.
When they were talking about, he's 24, I'm like, oh my gosh, give me a fucking shotgun, because he's 9 years younger than me,
and right.
He's more younger than you. Mike, are you kidding? When I was fucking 24, I was like taking my LSATs to get into law school. This motherfucker is on the biggest card in UFC history, but he went out there and I thought that he pressured Hendricks very well. He used a lot of jabs and very basic combinations, and Hendricks just, I think he's done. Like, I hate to write off people and be like, oh, this fighter sucked, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, he lost to Wonderboy, but Wonderboy's kind of weird. But Gastelum's a very traditional fighter, and Hendricks could not keep up with him at all. And that's at 170, and yeah, you and I kind of talked earlier today, and I totally agree with what you said, which is, I always thought Hendricks would be at 155. When he came into the UFC, I'm like, this pudgy fucker is 170? No.
Right.
He should.
Even WEC, I felt like, I'm like, I don't know. He's weird, because he had all those knockout wins in a row, but it was like just this one vicious shot, which I'm not saying that's luck or flukish, because obviously he hung in there five rounds with all the best welterweights in the world, but he had that streak. Then he had some tough, tough fights where I wouldn't want to fight GSP or Robbie Lawler for 25 minutes. You know what I mean?
Well,
that's a nightmare.
I would do it for the money. And also, Briggs, I'm such a badass with jiu-jitsu. I tap those motherfuckers out. But no, yeah, I know what you're saying. It's like, you look at him, it's like, dude, your frame is 155. You're like, you're barely bigger than Jim Miller and Takanori Gomi, who we will get to. Or maybe we already talked about. Fuck it. Anyways, do we already do that fight?
Yeah, we started at the beginning. We started with the opener and we're moving up.
Oh boy. I drink too much.
You were texting Magana at the time.
I'm still texting her. I just want
to. Hey, what are you drinking tonight?
Oh, just fucking plastic jug vodka.
No wine.
No, I gave up on the wine because for like $8, I can get like a handle of vodka.
Right.
And which is like, I have a real problem. I gotta stop. We had the we just did the fat so and the not as fat so. The main event in the Fat Sports one was Kat Zingano, Juliana Pena, and in the first round,
I had Kat win in the first.
Yeah.
She was on top for most of that round.
Yeah. I thought that Kat initially, for the first 5 to 7 minutes, had good gas tanks. She had some, just basic power double leg type of takedowns. But after that, it seemed to me that Pena just took over.
It was weird, yeah. I thought like Kat dominated that first round and looked like she was going to cruise through the whole fight. And then Pena just got, I don't know if it was like jitters or what, but Pena just got comfortable and was just kind of throwing her around. I mean, Kat had a big takedown in that second round where she just threw like Pena, like tossed her. But then Pena landed on top and took the back and was working for a choke. Then the third round was more of the same. Pena was just on top right away and just with some ground and pound, and kind of got close on a neck crank, but couldn't finish it. But it was a 29-28 win for Pena.
Yeah, it was, Pena has been a very curious case because she won the Ultimate Fighter. She blew out her knee. Now she's back. And she is talking, you know, Kat Zingano is a legitimate top, you know, five level women's
bantamweight.
Yeah, I was in a heavyweight, but yeah, bantam fat weight.
That would be a good division, women's heavyweight.
Oh, just, you know, we should shoot women's fat weight and bloated weight and non-period weight. Oh, that's fucking horrible. Oh, what the fuck's wrong with me? But yeah, I actually thought Pena did very good. She did, she kind of, you know, I think she's maybe one or two fights away from a title shot, although I say that knowing that, not to spoil anything, but Nunez fucked up Tate, and which means that they will do Ronda Rousey versus Amanda Nunez, maybe, in fucking November, which is, oh yeah, everyone will want to see that fight, the fucking Brazilian lesbian versus the American cunt. But, although, I will say, I kind of wrote it and tweeted it, I think it's really cool that the most badass manly sport of all time, two men locked in a, you know, a legitimate steel cage, and the biggest show that ever happened, and the main event, and the winner of the main event, was a gay woman. Like, that's kind of like, I think that's really, really cool. And like, you do not see that in basketball, football, baseball, hockey, tennis, anywhere else in the world. You would never see a gay individual at the pinnacle of the sport dominating the all-time biggest event in sports history. But the UFC actually did it, and nobody even talked about it. I thought that was you know, really cool, but we'll get to that in a little bit, because Pena beat, what's her face, who gives a shit, and then we had Caín Velasquez versus Travis Brown, and Velasquez came out, and he fought like the Caín Velasquez of, you know, what we imagine, I think. He went through and blitzed Travis Brown, and Brown's a very good fighter when he's not beating his ex-wife, and you know, I watched the fight, I'm like, holy shit, if he's on, and it's rare, but if he is on, Velasquez, I don't think he can be beat.
You know, I still think he's the best heavyweight of all time, but that's just me. I know people argue that one, but it's like, everybody loses a couple fights, and it's like, when he's on, like, the second two fights with Dos Santos, it's like, he's so much better than everybody else ever. You watch those two fights, it's unreal. Tonight he looked like the old Kane, or C-level Kane, as we
Caín! Caín! His name is Caín, not Kane. Be respectful of his Spanish heritage.
I apologize, Caín.
Racist.
Anyway, he looked great. Just destroyed him. Brown was gassed like 3 minutes into the fight, and my notes say, wow, he won with 3 seconds left. And then after the fight, I found it odd because he didn't like demand a title shot because he's Caín and he's like the soft-spoken guy who just murders dudes who are 20 pounds heavier than him and 5 inches taller than him. But he said he wants to fight the best guys. Like, what does that mean? He should be calling out Miocic or the winner of Overeem and Miocic. Cause I just found that bizarre. It's like, you've got this opportunity on the biggest show of the year to get your title shot, and you just come off this huge win where you destroy a good fighter and you don't step up and do it. It was bizarre to me, but I guess that's just how he is.
I kind of feel like, and given that Miocic and over him are fighting in September, that the most logical fight for Velasquez is a rematch with Verdum, and the winner of that gets a world title shot.
Yeah, but wouldn't you rather just bypass that if you're Velasquez? I mean, why risk fighting Verdum again? Just call him out. Say you want that shot. And a lot of times if you say it, you get it. It's
you're 100% correct. But if you're the UFC and you're booking, you want him. All right, we get like a free main event out of this. If you're Velasquez, you're a dumb fucking fighter who does not understand to minimize your risks in life. So it seems to me that, like, you have those dudes fight again at altitude and then remove all bullshit doubt, and we see what happens, and we see if Mr. Cleveland can beat pot smoking country. But yeah, moving on, we had Frankie Edgar and Jose Aldo, and I'm really curious what you thought about this fight.
Well, it was a tough fight to score. Like, I think it was 49-46, 49-46, 48-47 Aldo. I haven't seen the actual scorecards from the judges, but I bet there's some interesting scores there. It was a tough fight to score. I did have Aldo 49-46 as well. I had Frankie win in the first and then Aldo the next four. But Aldo landed the better, more significant strikes, I felt. Like, you could hear those shots, and Edgar was busted up at the end of the fight, and Aldo looked pretty good. He wasn't bleeding, he wasn't bruised. But I think probably total strikes, Edgar probably had more strikes. He had some leg kicks. He had some good jabs. But they just weren't as the velocity and impact wasn't comparable to what Aldo was doing. So most of the rounds I scored for Aldo, but I could see a 48-47 score. Even a couple of them could have scored 10-10. I know nobody does that, but it was a close fight, but Aldo still pulled out, I think, enough of the rounds to win it.
Yeah, it's weird because if I look at the fight as a whole, I'd be like, oh, Aldo won it. But round by round, when I looked at what I wrote, I'm like, Edgar had it 49-46. I just felt like he was more active, that he did more,
You scored it for Edgar?
I had Edgar winning the fight. Like, I'm just watching this, and I'm watching the whole fight. I'm like, but Edgar's pressing everything. He is doing all the action. Aldo is countering. He's being passive. And, part of the problem is, like,
you hate to say judging and scoring fights is subjective, but it's like, what do you consider more important? Like, octagon control, pressure, total damage, number of strikes, takedowns. Everybody's got a different way to judge that, and all the judges can see it differently. I mean, there's that classic example of, I don't know if it's Cecil Peoples or whoever.
Oh, like, no.
Kids don't care. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
That was Cecil Peoples. And honestly, part of my problem with this fight is, like, I'm watching it, and I have a problem, like, disassociating myself from how I would view it versus how a judge would view it. And right. I'm like, well, judges tend to favor the guy that's more aggressive and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, that's Edgar. He pressed the fight.
Right.
Aldo was always on his back heel. But when it was over, I'm like, well, Edgar didn't really land anything hard, but and Aldo avoided everything. So by pride style scoring or whatever, yeah, Aldo won. But some part of me is like, I don't know. Like, and maybe it's just because I like Edgar, but yeah. He was always in his face. He threw a lot of kicks. Did they hurt? No, but he still threw them, And Aldo, right. I just felt like Aldo was very, very passive throughout the entire fight. But, you know, I it's one of those fights where I'm like, eh, you know, they both won, they both lost, and, you know, fucking finish someone if you want to fight Connor in, you know, December or whatever.
Right, yeah. I thought it was interesting that they show Connor a couple times cage side. That's another one. It's like Aldo doesn't call out McGregor after the fight. And I know I'm like harping on basically booking fights, but it's like, call the guy out. He's right outside the cage. He knocked you out. You're the new interim champ. He's the real champ. It's like, you're talking about your coach. It's like, nobody cares. Like, what are you doing?
That's because he is, to be a racist, an uneducated, dumb Brazilian fuck who does not get why he
You would think based on his paycheck from the first McGregor fight, he would have picked up on it.
Oh, I agree, but I really, like, again, not just like, you know, I'll joke about Brazilians, but having talked to a lot of high-level fighters, they don't get it. And I'll you know, plug again for the four of you listening, the interview with Magana and KGB Lee, where like they kind of, it seems like women get it way more than men, where they're like, I just have to go out and be an athlete and I don't have to talk shit and blah blah blah. It's like, dude, if you talk shit, you become Brock Lesnar and you can win, and not just win, make, you know, $20 million where the fuck he made. Just like how, you know, in the third from the top main event was Daniel Cormier. What a segue that is. Daniel Cormier and Anderson Silva, and they fought, and give me your thoughts on that fight.
So, obviously, everybody knows the backstory. Anderson took this fight on 2 days' notice after Jones got yanked from the car. For that PED failure, for two PED failures, we should say, and the B sample failed. But we're past that. The fight went as you would think it would. I mean, you've got possibly, arguably, the second best light heavyweight of all time fighting a past his prime Anderson Silva, who usually typically fights at middleweight. Cormier's obviously got that Olympic wrestling pedigree. He got a few easy takedowns. First round, he was on top the whole time, pretty much in half guard. He couldn't really pass, I noticed. He never got into side control really at all in the first round. But Silver survived the first round. The crowd was already booing at this point. It's like amazing that the crowd has turned on Cormier considering Jones's record in public and arrests and everything, and the crowd hates Cormier. It's odd. But in the second round, Cormier stood with Silva a little bit and even missed a takedown at one point, but eventually he got the takedown. The crowd booed again. On the ground, it just didn't even look like a fair fight. Anderson couldn't do anything. I think in the second it got stood up. I think. And then they kind of boxed a little bit again. Cormier got a clinch. The crowd booed some more. Then he had the third round. They hugged each other, which I thought was a nice touch. In the third round, it seemed like Cormier was just standing with him so the crowd would stop booing him for a little while. But eventually he got hit a couple times and decided to take it down again. The weirdest part of this fight to me was the fact that, like, after 2.5 rounds, Cormier looked like he was gassed, considering he didn't really have to work that hard and he was kind of just laying on top of Silva and throwing some punches. Like, if he fought Jones in that kind of shape, I think Jones would have fucked him up, really. Anyway, so it was a 30-27. I think all three judges actually scored a 30-26. A full Camp Anderson versus DC might actually be kind of interesting, considering Anderson didn't train at all for this fight, and he had gallbladder surgery 7 weeks ago. He hung in there against a really good fighter, so in a way I was kind of impressed with Silva and not impressed at all with DC. But maybe he was playing it safe and didn't want to risk losing. Like, I get it to a degree, but at the same time, it's like, come on, it's a past his prime middleweight who didn't train at all. I thought DC would have been a little more impressive, but I think that's about it.
Yeah, I watched the fight, and from a very, very nerdy technical breakdown perspective, on the feet, Anderson was way better. In the second round, and definitely in the third round, he kind of had Cormier in trouble. On the ground, though, Anderson Silva used what we call the lockdown. Eddie Bravo is a version of half guard, and it really, really fucks with people on top. It removes your base. You can't.
Yeah, you lift the guy on top, basically, right?
Yeah.
So you can't rain down punches as well.
Yeah. What it is, it's a way to isolate one leg so that they can't use their hips and center their gravity and then, punch. So Anderson did a lot of that. The problem is that it's a very defensive position. But you can also use it for sweeps and such like that. But Anderson didn't, and therefore Cormier was allowed to be on top and throw punches and all this shit. And on the one hand, some part of me is like, oh, he beat the greatest of all time. The other part of me is like, yeah, the greatest of all time has not won in years. I hit my bachelor party before my wedding, before my divorce, and that was when Anderson lost the first time. That's how fucking long ago it was. Like,
yeah. And he was old then. He was in his late 30s then.
Yeah.
And
I don't want to take anything away from Anderson. I actually thought Anderson did very well on 2 days' notice and all that shit.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And I understand the way Cormier fought, because he looked at it from a pure sport perspective. And it is a wrestling perspective versus jiu-jitsu versus Muay Thai. Wrestlers want to win. They don't care if it's ugly or boring. They want to win.
Right.
Whereas the jiu-jitsu guy wants to not just win, but finish the guy and tap him out. And so Cormier was just content of, yeah, I went by, 30-27, 30-26, whatever it is. And that's all he did. And he got the win, and it preserved his record and blah, blah, blah. And I contrast that with the semi-main event of, look at the segue, everybody, Brock Lesnar and fucking Mark Hunt. Tell everybody what just happened.
Brock won it. I think I don't have the scores in front of me. It might have been, was it 29-27, all three?
Yeah.
Okay. I got confused by the judges and my score, but this was a weird fight too. If this was just two normal mid-level fighters, this would be the worst fight of the night, and it would be boring, and everyone would be complaining about it. But there's something about Brock and something about Mark Hunt where they can have a boring fight, and you're like on the edge of your seat. Every time Lesnar fights, to me, it's like the most exciting fight, because you have no idea what's going to happen, and the stakes are usually pretty freaking high, because if Brock wins, he probably fights again, and it's going to be a huge show, and it's going to bring more eyeballs to MMA, and it's like, in my mind, like, I don't care about Brock as, like, a person. I don't know if he's a good guy or a bad guy or whatever, but I want to see him win. It's like, I want to see Conor win, because it's good for the sport. It brings eyeballs to the sport and hopefully grows the thing. So every time he's fighting, I'm like, oh, God, why is he standing with Hunt? The whole second round, he just kind of plodded around the cage and was trying to just kind of keep his distance, keep it range, and not get hit. But in the first round, he took Hunt down, beat him up, kind of like I thought it would go. Again, Hunt doesn't have good takedown defense. He never has. Just the guys he's been able to beat haven't tried to take him down. So Brock got him down in the first round, a big double leg at one point, kind of slammed him actually, then got some good shots in on, from side control. Second round, he kind of just took the round off almost. There's very little action and Hunt didn't really engage either. Hunt was standing the whole second round and didn't do much. I don't know if he was afraid if he overcommitted, Brock would take him down again or what. But I did score the second round for Hunt. He landed more shots and Brock didn't really get him down. In the third, Brock took him down again, mounted him, a lot of ground and pound. He went from half guard to full mount, kind of just pummeled him. There were some hard shots there where, either there's a broken hand or a fractured skull. He was punching Mark Hunt really hard on the ground. It wasn't a good fight, but just for the spectacle, I was into it.
Yeah, it's a spectacle. It's Brock Lesnar, where whenever he does anything in life, even though he's 39 or whatever, you look at him, you go, you are not a normal human being. No. And when you see the weigh-ins, and Mark Hunt cuts to get to 265, and you look at Brock, he's like, what the fuck?
Like, right. They don't look like the same species.
Exactly. And the way that Brock fought was basically, I will paw out like a bear and then eventually grab you and take you down and try to maul you again like a bear. And I really think that it's sad, and maybe there'll be somebody else that comes along later, but Brock's almost 40. We never got to see somebody like Brock at 22 or 24 or 27 years old do what he does. Just this fucking unreal force of nature. Because he's almost 40. He went in there after almost 5 years and fought a guy who was a legitimate top 10 heavyweight, and he embarrassed him. He made him look like nothing. Hunt did not land a single real punch. Brock took him down, and he took him down with power takedowns. It wasn't anything slick or smooth or like, oh wow, look the way he transitioned to the back. No,
Brock. There weren't a lot of ankle picks.
Exactly. Brock just said, like at one point, Brock says like, I will bury my head and take you down, and he did it, and it worked. And then it, you know, at one point he got mount. He landed big heavy punches. All kinds of, it's like, this is a, you know, Joe Rogan said it, I think, but if he didn't, I'll say it. Brock Lesnar is a Viking. He is somebody that in like year, you know, 1100, you give him an axe, he would go on the battlefield and he would murder hundreds of people all by himself. He is that kind of fucking freak athlete, and he went in there against Mark Hunt, who is in his own right. Mark Hunt is a freak himself. We've seen them where he just lands one punch and it's all over. But Brock fought smart. Kind of fought like the way Overeem's been fighting, where he'll paw and wait for his opportunity. And then out of nowhere, he just fucking would take Hunt down, get the mount. And when he got the mount, he was like, oh, I'm not going to fuck around. I'm going to keep you down. I'm going to pound you. And, you know, again, it's just from a storyline perspective, the idea that he came back from almost four and a half years, whatever it is, and did what he did to a top 10 heavyweight. I mean, Brock Lesnar is a very, very special person. And I don't think he'll ever get the credit that he actually deserves. People will see him and think, oh, he's a pro wrestler, he's on steroids or whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no. This is someone that did not get recruited out of high school to be on a college team. So he went to junior college for 2 years, won two national championships in junior college, went to the NCAAs in his first year, lost to Stephen Neal, who later became a NFL champion.
Offensive lineman for the Patriots, yeah.
Exactly. Like a legitimate high-level dude, and who won the world championship, all this shit. He lost by 1 point. And
he protected Tom Brady for a lot of years.
Exactly. And, you know, he was the one that was deflating the footballs. And then, that's right. You're in fucking New England, you fucking cheaters. I say that like the fucking Bears have a chance to do anything. And then the next year, Brock went out and won the NCAAs, and he lost to Neal by a single point. So, he is someone that if he had actually really wanted to, he'd probably be an Olympic medalist and all kinds of shit. But you know what? He went to WWE, he made his money, and good for Brock. He's almost 40, and we'll never know what it was like to see a guy that was born to wield a fucking 10-pound axe and cave someone's head in with it. But, he did his best against Mark Hunt, but Hunt has, that Samoan head. So, it was one of those fights where, like, if any two other people had that fight, it would be boring.
Right.
But when I saw those two have it, I'm like on the edge of my seat the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminded me of the Heath Herring fight a little bit, where it was just like Brock just kind of dominated it, and it wasn't an exciting fight. You were always like, God, if this ends up standing, he's going to get hit and he's going to get knocked out. Like every fight with Brock, there's that fear because it's like he does not like getting hit. Even in this fight, he got hit a couple times. They weren't like big shots, but you saw him flinch and like he doesn't respond well to that, which most human beings don't. But if you are fighting in the UFC, you got to be able to take a few shots. You think Brock will fight again?
I do, because he went out and he beat a top 10 heavyweight dude. I think Brock is someone that does not live large. Like, if I had Brock's kind of money, I'd still probably be broke because I have, like, five houses in Hollywood or whatever. But Brock lives in fucking Saskatchewan, Canada, where the property costs, like, $2 total. And he probably cut his own trees down and did shit like that.
Yeah.
And so...
But, I mean, who would you get... Okay. Like, my argument has been through this whole Lesnar thing was Hunt was the perfect opponent for him. I get most people don't agree with that line of thinking. They may now, but Hunt, his ground game isn't there. It's like everyone knows this. I think they just forgot based on the recent people he's fought. But it's like if you look at the rest of the heavyweight division, he's not going to be able to take those other guys down as easily as he could Hunt. I mean...
Well,
what's the fight for him?
You say that, but if you go back and look at the fight against Cain Velasquez, he bull rushed him and took him down right away.
Yeah.
And he was younger, but he also had diverticulitis, and again, he's almost 40. He will not be the same, but most of the heavyweights in the division are older. Sure.
Yeah, so, they're almost all 42.
We have Velasquez, we have Overeem and Miocic and Verdum and Brock, and
I just don't see him beating most of those guys. I don't know. He could get the takedown and land a couple good shots, and it could be over like the second Mir fight. But looking at that top 10, granted they're all older, they're not great fighters, and Brock would have a shot against some of them, but a lot of these guys are better on the ground than Hunt. I mean, it's got to be a big enough name where it's going to mean something. It's like, if you put him in there with Arlovsky or Brown or Rothwell, I don't know if people are going to really shell out $60 for that. I mean, somewhat, because it's Brock, but...
Actually, Arlovsky is a perfect opponent, because I think he will just, maul Arlovsky, but if he doesn't, Arlovsky gets a rub, he gets a big win, blah, 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 and if Brock beats him after coming off beating Hunt, then all of a sudden it's like, this dude just came in after 5 years off and beat two top 10 dudes like it was nothing. let's give him a title shot. And right. then, you know, I absolutely think Brock could beat Miocic.
Yeah.
He's just a fucking weird freak. And, you know, there's no way to put it besides that. Like, you cannot discount Brock Lesnar for anything ever. But who you also cannot discount is Amanda Nunes. Segue! Who beat Misha Tate in the first fucking round. Tell everybody what just happened in that fucking women's bantamweight championship fight.
Yeah, I mean, a little backstory with this one was Tate had, made weight, last second by, half a pound. Because the weigh-ins are at 10 o'clock in the morning now. She claimed she had trouble timing the weight cut and getting there on time. She actually weighed in at 10:02, and if she didn't make weight then, they were going to cancel the fight. Well, they wouldn't have canceled it, but it wouldn't have been for the title, which would have made the show even more crazy. But Nunes just outstruck her on the feet right off the bat. She was landing jabs. Misha was stunned, almost immediately. She got bloodied. Nunes took her back. And Tate tapped to a rear naked choke, but it looked more like a neck crank to me. It didn't look like she had it under the jaw. But Tate was a bloody mess, and it was over quick. I kind of saw this fight going five rounds to a decision. I did not expect Nunes to win that quick and that easily. I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, it's honestly, so was I, because everybody knows that the book of Nunes is the first 10 minutes are kind of tough, but she's never overwhelmed or blitzed someone or done anything like what she did with Tate. And Tate has an amazing ability to survive.
Yeah, perseveres always.
Exactly. We saw with, Holly Holm, but a bunch of fights. I think it was Julie Kedzie and Strikeforce. When she avoided an armbar and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I mean, even the fight where she went three rounds with Rousey, it was she was getting thrown around, but she'd go for a takedown. She never gives up. And even the cat fight that she lost, it was she was taking those knees, but it wasn't she was out. She wasn't giving up. She was still going for a takedown when that fight ended. So, yeah, this was a majorly impressive win by Nunes.
Yeah, especially given that in the past, Nunes has basically won all of her. When she has won, it's been, she wins the first two rounds, loses the third, wins 29-28. She fought, I think, Kat Zingano, and she won the first two rounds, but Kat came back and won in the third, and so on and so forth. But in this fight, it just seemed like she just caught Misha off guard, which is, again, surprising, because we know that Misha is mentally tough, is tougher than maybe any woman ever, and so for Nunes, the gay that she is, to win, and I saw that, I only mentioned the gay thing because on her fucking UFC embedded, her girlfriend was there helping her, I'm like, huh. That's kind of cool. I actually really think it's really, really cool that the biggest show in UFC history was headlined by a gay woman winning a title. We all think of, and it's true for the most part, but UFC, cage fighting, men versus men, blah, 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 and the lesbian main evented and won over Brock Lesnar, Daniel Cormier, Anderson Silva, Frankie Edgar, Jose Aldo. Yep, at the end of the day, a muff diver fucking won the fucking world championship, and all of them will forever know she was the main event. And I think I just totally get off on the idea of I have a thing for the gay culture, I guess, but not like that, everybody, but yeah, it's just kind of crazy, and we're coming up on an hour. I'm trying to smooth talk Magana on the phone. So did UFC 200, in your opinion, was it better, worse? How would you compare it to UFC 100?
Oh, jeez. I haven't even looked at the 100 card.
George St. Pierre versus Thiago Alves.
Thiago Alves, yeah. Brock and Mir. Henderson and Bisping.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Here's the thing. The middle of this show was flat. Like, those decision fights.
Yep.
I mean, the Sage fight, like, it was like, what are we doing here when I was watching that? But, it was a decent show. I mean, you had on the main card some high-level fights. You had the freak show with Brock. And actually, I guess you could say you had two freak show fights, actually. I don't know which one's more of a freak show. Brock versus Hunt or Cormier versus two-day notice Anderson Silva without a gallbladder, which is more of a freak show. But I'm okay with a couple freak show fights here and there because you also had Edgar Aldo. You had Nunez, Tate. It was a good show. Was it a blowaway show, like greatest show ever? No, I wouldn't say that, but it was solid. I wasn't pissed I spent the $60 on it, but I wouldn't say it was one of my favorite overall shows of all time by any stretch.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because like when you just said all that, I'm like, yeah, I've watched a lot of shows even just this year that were more entertaining on pay-per-view or free TV or whatever. But I'm like, wait a second. The third fight from the top was Anderson Silva versus Daniel Cormier. Like, holy shit. Like,
yeah, so we sound a little spoiled probably.
Yeah, like that is a lifetime dream fight. And we got and that was not even the big fight. But it's like, again, all credit to Dana White, Joe Silva, all those guys, because this is the definition of taking chicken shit and make it into chicken salad.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no Connor, no Ronda, no Jones. Their three biggest draws were not on this show. Obviously, Brock's an exception to the rule, but and you didn't feel like it was like a disappointing card on paper because you looked at it and it was just stacked. Like to me, like a hardcore fan, like Diego Sanchez versus Joe Lozon's a little bit of a dream match. I wish it happened half a decade ago, but even so, it's like, that's a cool fight. That's two like great 155 pound guys who have never fought each other and always have action fights. So, it was just that the middle of that card was dragged for me, and it was like, let's get the show on the road. It's tough to, and I'm whining here, but it's tough to sit through like 6 hours of that with like three or four decisions in a row. It's like, it's just a long time to sit and watch just between all the commercials and WWE video game ads and, whatever else they're putting out there. It's just like, it drags. It's like, you want the fights to come quicker. Obviously, they got to pay the bills with the commercials. I get it, but it's like, trying to sit through 6 hours is a long time. This might have been seven even when it's all said and done. I don't know. But yeah.
It was 5:30. It was six and a half, a little over 6.5 hours. Maybe.
There's nothing on TV you watch for 6.5 hours. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing. There's no sporting event that's 6.5 hours. It's crazy.
The only thing I ever watch for 6.5 hours is House, when I drink and I fall asleep and I wake up in the morning and Netflix says, do you want to continue? I'm like, oh, yeah, I passed out after an hour and a half. So, right. Yeah, it's weird because, like, I felt like the first half of the show, I'm like, holy shit, every fight was great.
Right.
And then there was like a little, you know, kind of a boring period. Yeah, Brown and, you know, Velasquez just beating the shit out of Brown, which was amazing. Because, you know, Brown beats women. And then we had, the featherweight interim title, which I still think I'm the only person in the world that thought that Frankie Edgar won. But whatever, it doesn't matter. Then we had, you know, fucking, wait, what was third from the top? Was that
Anderson Silva and Daniel Cormier?
Yeah, Silva and, Anderson Silva and Daniel Cormier, where I'm like, yeah, Silva used a lot of the lockdown to neutralized Cormier's ground game. He kind of half phoned it in, but in that third round, there were some moments where I'm like, holy fuck, Anderson, yeah. he might clip him. Then we had fucking Brock and, Mark Hunt were like, the entire time I was enthralled by it. I'm like, this is Brock Lesnar. And there's never been anyone like Brock Lesnar ever. And then we had that main event, and it's like, holy shit, Nunes beat Tate, which it kind of sucks. If you're the UFC, yeah, that sucks. But on some level, I'm like, good for Nunes. She went out there, she's worked her ass off, her lesbian ass off, and, she got the W over Tate, and she won it decisively, no controversy. I'm like, good for her. It's like, it wasn't quite like UFC 100 where every single person that should have won. Like, Dan Henderson had the amazing knockout. George St. Pierre annihilated Thiago Alves. And Brock Lesnar just made Frank Mir look like a bitch. But for, like, again, 10 fights on this show, they pretty much all delivered. And before we go, because I'll post it sometime tomorrow, give your final thoughts on UFC the 200th show, even though there's been like another 150 bullshit shows.
Yeah.
What did you think of UFC? Did it live up to the hype?
Almost. I think not having Jones on the card hurts it a little bit. Granted, Anderson Silva's a legend, but on 2 days' notice, it wasn't really fair to him. Obviously, he wanted the payday. I don't know if he got paid like Jones was going to get paid, but I'm sure for no training camp to come in and roll around on the floor with Daniel Cormier for a couple $1 million, it was probably worth it. But not having Jones there was kind of a bummer. I think that hurt the card overall. As far as how it drew, I don't know. I'm skeptical that it's going to set the record. I don't feel like it has that hype behind it tonight. I just didn't get the feel that it was that big of a show. I could be wrong though, but that's just kind of my hunch. But to me, the most underrated story of the whole week, nobody's even talking about it, is Eddie Alvarez coming in and winning the 155, the lightweight belt. It was like he had that 2 year period where he couldn't get out of Bellator. There was that struggle. He lost the fight with Cerrone. He wins a couple fights. People don't think he's that good. And then all of a sudden he just destroys Dos Anjos and wins the title. It's like nobody even really talked about it because it got lost in all the John Jones PED stuff, Anderson Silva coming in, UFC 200, the fight night card. And that's like the most underreported, undercovered story of the week. There's a new lightweight champ, and it's kind of like a happy ending because Alvarez had a tough, tough road to get to the UFC. He fought in, Bodog and Bellator and all these smaller promotions for years and years and built up this rep that he was a good fighter but not the best in the world. And him pulling that win off against RDA in such convincing fashion where he just blitzed him kind of like – it was kind of similar to the Nunes tape fight, I felt. But it just didn't get the press I felt it deserved. So to me, that might have been one of the highlights of the weekend for me.
I can't argue against that. Watching Eddie come and do what he did against Rafael Dos Anjos, and it was weird because like I never thought Dos Anjos was as good as he has showed. Which is a really dumb way to say things, but
yeah, sometimes you fight to the level of your competition. You step it up when you're fighting somebody better.
Exactly, and I always thought like, Dos Anjos is good, but like he's not the greatest in the world. And Eddie came out, and he just He beat the shit out of him. You know,
yeah.
He literally knocked him out while Dos Anjos was standing. And, you know, good for Eddie. He lost the fight to you know, great man Cerrone. But, you know, he came back and he won a bunch of fights. Decisions where he did what he had to do to get a title fight. And when he was in the title fight, he went out there and he finished the best lightweight in the world in under 5 minutes. And all credit in the world to, you know, Eddie Alvarez for that, because he earned that shit.
Yeah, and just, I want to say he toiled like in the minor leagues forever, but just that whole contract dispute with Bellator seemed like such bullshit, and the fact he couldn't get out of it. He lost like a couple years off the prime of his career due to the contract legalities. So to me, it was a happy ending for him. And just the fact that nobody even talks about it is just because of all the other big news that broke over the weekend. I just felt it should get a little more publicity, I guess.
Yeah, and that's a good way to end our podcast. I would say, what do you want to plug? But it'll be at halfguarded.com, plus your awesome, badass restaurant in Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, Massachusetts, Vermont. Rhode Island, they're all the same, everybody. Yeah. Oh, I can't fucking wait to get out there. I know we did it on the last show, but I'm so fucking love with fucking lighthouses.
It's a weird fetish.
Yes, it is. And on that note, all right, Matt, thanks for recapping this shit. I'll hopefully get it up first thing tomorrow morning after I fall asleep on my cot with my dogs. And everybody, if you're listening, I'm trying to get Maganya on the line later. She probably won't do it because I'm a creeper. But, you know, Matt probably knows more than she does. Woo, what? And that was your, you know, I decided to call this podcast The Show. At halfguarded.com, because Halfguarded Hour sucks ass. So this was The Show. I'm Mike Coughlin. That was Matt Grady. He's smarter than I am. And I'm going to hit the button and it will hang up on him. He'll be like, what? And that's it for everybody. So thanks for listening. And we will talk to you guys again sometime in the future.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about. We hope.